So every ton of recycled material that you use to replace virgin plastic, you are saving approximately 1.5 tons of CO2 emissions, anywhere between 1.3 to 1.5 tons of CO2 emissions. And that is the kind of impact that you can have when you replace virgin plastic. Again, there is no end quality issues as such. You know, you might notice a slight bit of a color change every time you add a little recycled material to your virgin plastic. But in terms of maybe strength or in terms of otherwise look and feel of it, it looks very similar to virgin plastic. And I'm talking about when you're using anywhere between 30 to say 50% recycled material in your final application. It looks very similar to virgin plastic. So there's not much difference that you can tell. But the kind of impact that you will actually have in terms of CO2 emissions can be huge.
Well, that's a brief about the impact of recycling and why we should consider doing that. Stay tuned for yet another insightful conversation. Hello and a big warm welcome to yet another episode on the Mission Shunya podcast. Hope you're doing well. So the very fact that you have tuned into the show is a sign that you probably like the show or the theme of getting to net zero carbon emissions. In either case, I am really happy about that. Sustainability and getting to net zero is a very big canvas, and it is also good in a way because I can cover a range of topics in that. A lot of positive feedback that I get is for the range of topics that I cover on the podcast. In fact, it gets a little tough in deciding the right topic for the right time. One topic that is definitely getting bigger is recycling. The very first episode on that was about upcycling and the story of Reimagined. It is one of the popular episodes of the show, and you should definitely check that out if you haven't done so. Today's topic is also around waste management and recycling, and it features the work of a company who started with the intent of harnessing the possibilities of plastic. As always, I am joined by a passionate person who can share the story. So let's welcome our guest and hear more about what her company offers in this space.
I'm Pratibha, and I handle the sustainability and marketing at Lupro. Lupro is a waste management company that is very well integrated right from the point of collection to recycling into granules and then finally manufacturing end products or packaging made from the recycled granules as well.
So Pratibha, let's begin by looking at the origin stories of Lupro. So how did the company start, and what was the pivotal point from when the business actually started?
So we started our business back in 2012, but back then we were just a smaller sort of a trading or just a processing firm. You know, we hadn't really, recycling wasn't something that we had picked up, or waste management wasn't an industry that we had stepped into. I think recycling and waste management was something that we started along the way around 2016, when we actually set up our own recycling plants. And without knowing, to be very honest, because the circular economy as a term was not used as much, but we were sort of a part of a circular economy and, you know, creating a circular sort of a loop as well with what we were doing without really realizing that we were doing it.
Correct.
So yeah, we started our recycling activities back in 2016. And then slowly and steadily, we kind of in the last 2 years, we have also set up our own collection centers, in order to make sure that we have the kind of raw material availability that our, you know, our processing or our recycling demands.
Okay. Now, you did mention that you started your own collection centers in the recent times. Is that the biggest challenge that you faced when you got started in 2016 with the recycling activity, but was collecting or getting the right quantity of, right quality of waste, was that the biggest challenge that you faced?
I mean, yes, because what we deal with primarily is flexible plastic waste. Now, flexible, rigids or is something PET, HD, etc. is something that people have been working with for a long time. Most recycling companies do tend to use that kind of product or raw material. But we use, 80% of what we do is LDPE.
Okay.
And again, it's post-consumer waste. Now, LD plus post-consumer waste in sort of the, when I talk about waste generation, when you're looking at the raw material at that end, that is not something that normally you would get your hands on very easily because that is the material which get mixed up with other sort of waste in your bins and ends up going into an incineration.
Correct.
Plant, or it ends up in landfills, or maybe it'll end up in oceans. But the point is, it will not go to any recycler because no one has been using that historically. So yes, access to raw material was one of the biggest challenges we faced. Besides that, a lot of sort of local trust building activities as well, with the right people to come and give us the kind of waste as well, to even encourage people or to upskill people to a point, you know, where making them realize that this kind of a material has some value attached to it. That has been a big challenge. But now that we have, a good sort of two to three years down in our kitty with collection, that is something that we've managed to streamline over the years.
That's interesting. Now, you did mention about the kind of products that you recycle, and now you also upcycle products. So because you close the loop, and circular economy is the key aspect, or if I would say the differentiating aspect in the market in India at this point in time. So can you run us through your operations, like from where it starts and where it ends? Who are the major stakeholders?
So our operations start right from the point of collection. So, within waste management, when you look at it as an industry, you'll see people handling aspects of collection. You will see certain companies recycling the collected material into granules. And then you'll see a third aspect of people that are, converters that are actually making the final product, whether be it furniture or be it, secondary packaging for a lot of industries, etc. So, there's a third aspect. But what we are doing is we have integrated really well across the entire supply chain. So our activities start from collection of plastic waste, where we have our own collection centers. We have about 8 of them at the moment. Mostly around Gujarat and Maharashtra, but one up north and one sort of in mid as well, and one we're planning on opening down south as well.
Okay.
Where we collect waste material directly from waste pickers, we collect it from NGOs, we collect it from a number of aggregators, and we collect. We've just started setting up a few sort of reverse logistics as well with a few companies where they want us to sort of pick up. A lot of end-of-life waste from retailers as well. So again, very important for you to have good sort of collection centers located very strategically around various cities to be able to do something like that.
Correct.
So, and we work with municipalities as well. Again, a model that we started in the last 1 year, where we are working with nagarpalikas of a lot of cities and with gram panchayats of a lot of villages in order to collect plastic waste directly from people. So all of this waste comes into our collection centers. From there, it goes into our own segregation centers, where waste is segregated into about 15 to 20 categories based on various polymer types, based on various colors, based on, how clean or dirty the waste is, because that will then define whether it goes into our next step of washing plant as well or not. We have one of the largest waste washing lines in India, at least, capable of doing about 10,000 metric tons per year at the moment.
Wow.
So all of that, the dirty waste goes into the waste washing line. Again, all of the water in there is 100% recycled.
Nice.
No sort of waste at that end as well. Once it's washed, then, it gets shredded and then it goes into the next sort of compounding into actual granules. From there, obviously compounded into various granules or various grades, etc. We've done a lot of process innovations in the middle as well, where we have made sure that we have our own de-inking machines, we have our own deodorizing machines. Again, small example of that I'll give you. Milk packets, for example, is something that we use a lot, and that's something that we end up getting as well because that's something that people are using on a daily basis.
True.
But now, if you would normally just recycle a milk packet into granules, you would get a grayish color granule because obviously there's a lot of printing, etc. as well, even though the original cover is white.
True.
but you will get a gray granule. Now, the end application of a gray granule are lesser because people tend to like white at the end of the day. Because then, you know, you can sort of further print on that and make it suit your own brand.
Correct.
But when you de-ink something like that, you get a completely white, sort of a milky white granule at the end. So you've, again, increased the value of that waste by adding that one process innovation in the middle. So that's, for example, something that we have done. And then you get more applications of something like that as well. Then again, we have something called deodorizing. Now, because we work with post-consumer waste, inherent property of it is that it will smell bad.
Fair.
You know, because you will always get mixed waste with food, oil, etc. So you get a multiple sort of mixed smells inside and nobody wants that in their end product.
Correct.
So when we deodorize it, we take the sort of bad smells out of it and they actually end up smelling quite good when it comes out of the deodorizing. So these are sort of some of the process innovations. Obviously, we have different grades of granules as well. And when we sell our product, we sell granules also to a lot of converters because a lot of brands tend to have, obviously, they don't want to depend on just one converter as well. So although we have our own conversion facility as well, our own processing facility, we sell these granules to a lot of people. But we also make a lot of final product, which is obviously the next step after the recycling into granules, where we are making the final packaging as well for the products and then sort of obviously printing on it again. But again, at every step in our supply chain, we sort of make sure that we have kept the end of life point into consideration, you know, where we make sure that anything that we make is 100% recyclable. And again, anything that we print on this as well, we make sure that this is, you know, if somebody else wants to, if we don't get a hold of our own product, you know, after its end of life, whoever does get it, if there is something like a process innovation of de-inking, etc., that is something they're able to do. So yeah, everything that we do is 100% recyclable, besides using recycled waste as well in it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, it gives a big picture. I mean, it gives a whole picture of how you start and how you end and what are the value additions in the process, in the value chain. I really like the idea of having like 100% recycled water because all these micro steps kind of have a big impact when you run the system and when you scale up the system in a big way. And you did mention about brands in the conversation. So brands are a big factor because you have tied up with a lot of big brands in the industry. So how did that come along?
So that's been a process which has taken a lot of time, I'll be very honest. Initially, when we started out, in India at least, there was not much of a demand for recycled material. You know, the policies also weren't in place back then.
Correct.
Unlike they are right now. So we mostly focused on the export market. You know, about 80% of what we did was exported.
Oh, nice.
So again, we did 100% recycled retail bags, for example. We did a lot of garbage bags, etc., for example. But everything was exported. And also when you're exporting it, you have good terms, you know, where you have contracts in place, etc. So you're also guaranteed as a company that's just starting off. That's something that you would want to look at as well, where you have sort of guaranteed sale of in terms of contracts in place with the companies that you're working for.
Correct.
And that's something that is not, I mean, I don't think it's prevalent in India also till today. So, you know, people don't normally tend to have these contracts, long-term contracts in place. But at least now there are policies in place. So I think it's a bit different. But I'll give you an example of how we maybe started off in India.
Sure.
We make automotive covers as well as an end product. So we are, I think, literally serving to every automotive company at the moment in India. And one of the first companies that we started selling to in automotive segment, I think, was Maruti.
Okay.
And that must have taken, about 3 years, three and a half years to convert them from the time of first talking to them to actually selling the product. So it's been a long time, you know, if with any brand that you start working with. At the moment, we brought that sales cycle down to maybe about 6 months. Maximum a year. But back then, it took a longer time. Like I just said, it took us 3 years to even convert someone like a Maruti when you're just starting off. But slowly and steadily, we got sort of obviously more companies on board. We got first sort of really well into the automotive space. Now we're getting in into, we've gotten into the FMCG space quite a bit now. And I think from there, it's slowly and steadily as you get one brand, then, you know, sort of you get noticed by more brands as well.
Fair.
One important thing that obviously has happened to us is that we got funded by Circulate Capital about 2 years ago.
Wonderful.
Which obviously ended up creating a lot of buzz. Besides that, again, 2 years ago, we had a tie-up with Dow Chemicals, where they are currently helping us with a few, I would say, with our R&D, etc. You know, we have access to their material science experts when we are looking at making a new product.
Oh, okay.
We have access to their lab facilities, etc. as well for a lot of trials that we can conduct before, obviously, finally rolling out our products as well. So that's a big help. Besides that, obviously, the kind of contacts that someone like a Dow Chemicals has is humongous, right? So getting that access as well has been quite a boon for us.
Well, that's perfect, because the way I see it in the space and in the sector is basically two things are very crucial. One is the technology. Well, you can develop technology in-house or you can partner with brands like Dow Chemicals and then come up with it. And the other factor is, of course, funding. And both of that has happened to you in the last few years. So that's definitely a pivotal moment for you. But the other factor, especially in India market, is the policy front. You did mention briefly that policies have also evolved on a positive note in the recent years. But then there is always this factor of price. You do have a big market outside of India, but in India, price is always a big factor when big brands come to buy your product. Did you see that also converging in the last couple of years?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that has happened more because of the kind of push from the policy end that we have seen. So, you know, when the sort of first initial EPR guidelines obviously came in, there was at some point last year, where they were going to make it compulsory for brands to start using by 2023 to start using at least about 15%. I think in their flexibles, recycled flexible plastic waste in their flexibles and about 20% in their rigids. So seeing that kind of a push as well. And you know how there has been generally a push of plastic waste management as well otherwise.
Correct.
In India, you know, sort of foreseeing that the policies might actually get formalized, which they have now this year. I think brands itself have started, have gotten a bit conscious. Where this is definitely an angle that they need to look at. And again, I think a lot of brands have their own commitments as well of by 2030, what they want to achieve, by 2050, what they want to achieve. And any brand, a bigger brand at least, when they are looking at achieving, say, even, you know, 10% or 20% reduction in their CO2, they never start with, you know, when they start conversations with us, like I said, it could be a one-year cycle, you know, conversion cycle. Because there'll be a lot of trials, etc., that they have to hold at their end. And then when they start purchasing, they're obviously not going to start purchasing a lot of quantity at one time. They're going to slowly and steadily sort of expand the quantity. So that could be a process that could take up to 2 to 3 years for even them to get comfortable with any new person.
Correct.
So obviously the kind of commitments they have for maybe say 2030 or 2025, it's something that they need to start taking action on at the moment to be able to achieve something like that.
No, that is fair. And I think that is where I think your solution, the Plasticycle product, the way I see it, the way I've read about it on your platforms, I think it's a whole package that you can offer brands who want to have the sustainable transformation and meet their targets. Am I right?
Absolutely. So we offer a circular loop program. I'll give you a small example of something that we are doing with Anita Dongre. And I'm saying that because it's a smaller sort of company as a requirement in terms of final packaging. But the kind of model that we have with them is, you know, where we collect their plastic waste that is generated in their pan-India.
Okay.
It comes into our collection centers. It gets recycled, etc., and goes into their own final product again. So, you know, the kind of outer wrapping or the packaging that they're buying from us for their textile products. Their own waste has gone into their own products. So it's a beautiful story for them as well as a brand to be able to tell people that they're more or less a zero waste company in terms of plastic waste, at least, you know, where they don't generate waste, basically.
Yes, that's a nice little story to kind of build a brand around. So that's nice. But coming back to the price front, I do understand that you're very competitive in the market when you give these products back to the customers as well. So am I right in my assumption?
Yes, absolutely. So we peg our prices against Reliance prices, which change every month, sometimes in the middle of the month as well. And we always make sure that we are anywhere between 3% to 7% cheaper
Wonderful.
Then the virgin prices. But again, depending on, when I say 3 to 7%, it depends on the final application as well that you want to develop. But obviously, but definitely never above virgin.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's really a good benchmark and a good target to work towards. And glad that you have achieved that benchmark. Now, moving to the next phase for Lucro. You definitely want to scale up your end-to-end solution in many cities, work with many city councils. So what do you think is a challenge in kind of scaling up the model to many cities across India?
So I'll give you 2-3 examples over here. One is working capital.
Correct.
It is, you know, because you have to collect a lot of raw material and there's a lot of stages, obviously, before you can make the final product. It's not as easy as just buying a virgin granule from somewhere and then just processing, you know, converting it into whatever based on demand that you can just do this. We have to really forecast demand based on that. We have to make sure that we have a certain amount of collection in place. Again, there are different types of products which will use different grades of recycled granules in it. So we have to make sure that we have different colors of the raw material. When I said we segregate it into different colors and different polymer types, etc., we have to make sure our collection is more than what our final processing will be, because we are going to be segregating it into various sort of grades before processing it into recycled granules, etc. So there's a lot of investment in current working capital, and a lot of capital is obviously locked in terms of the raw material, etc., that we have in place.
Correct.
I think that is one big problem in trying to scaling up to many cities, because that sort of a control would be difficult to sort of establish as well. Banks still don't support waste management as an industry at the moment in India. So that's one big challenge that we are facing till today. You know, when you're setting up your own collection centers, etc. as well, there's a lot of local support that you need. There's a lot of trust building activity that has to be done. When I say that, I mean in terms of even if you're buying from, say, aggregators, you're buying from directly from waste pickers. When we buy, we do 100% digital transactions. We do absolutely no cash transactions. But when you start working with someone that you're sourcing material from in waste management, the first thing they would want to do is get you to pay them in cash.
Correct.
So the only way to overcome that is it's something that happens over years, you know, where they start trusting you, where you tell them that there is nothing that's happening on credit right now. We are paying you, you know, your digital transaction is happening upfront. There's a third-party waste slip that they get when they weigh their material from a third party and they get it to us. And, you know, so that there is a trust built in where we're not asking them to weigh it on our weigh bridge at the moment, where they might not sort of have that faith in us. So it's a basically a longer process to be able to do something like that. Then I think there is an aspect of ease of doing business as well in different states, etc., which would probably be longer for us to try and establish in any new state, for example, if we were looking at anything. Then again, there are things like language barriers, especially when you're working at the ground level, where you're looking at setting up, say, a collection center as well. That is one big aspect that you have to try and overcome.
Correct. I totally understand the last part of it. When you're dealing with people on ground, especially the last mile, I think it is definitely a big challenge and you have to overcome a lot of systems there among themselves, the groups, communities. I mean, it's a close-knit community.
It's a very close-knit community. Yeah.
Yeah, getting their confidence and getting their buy-in into this whole idea, it takes time. But of course, I think as you have seen in other cities, once you get there, I think once you have a system and process, I think it should be streamlined. But as you said, it takes a lot of capital to get there, stay in the market for that duration, build the trust and roll it over a long period. I'm sure that will be streamlined as you go along. Now, as a company, what's next for Lucro? Obviously, scaling up to new cities and other things is on the priority. But are you looking at other waste sources too? Or are you looking at it from technology? So what's next from the big picture point of view?
So I think one important thing that I probably have missed talking about is the development of our software. That's something that we have helped a lot with in terms of the architecture build-up of it. It's called SACMA.
Nice.
So scan and trace across the circular economy is the concept of it, where
nice.
It's a blockchain-based software where waste is tracked right from the point of collection. So when waste comes in, say, from a waste picker or from an aggregator, whoever it is, the details of the person that is bringing in the waste, geotagging the waste in terms of where it's been picked up from, what the quantity was, what the material was, how much we paid for it, etc. Everything is something that is logged in along with images into the system.
Nice.
You know, then as it moves into the next facility, you know, if it's moving in into say segregation, the QR code is sort of tracked at every touch point or every facility that the waste has moved to, till it's converted to recycled granules, and then even beyond that, when it's made into the final product. So essentially, to a point where if the final product has, say, a QR code on it, you can get the entire history of the movement of that particular waste right from the point of collection. You know, to the detail of, you can actually get the images that have, the actual images that have gone into this particular product as well. So it's not sort of a mass balance-based approach. It's an actual approach where, you know, we are looking at it like the real waste that has come in into making the final product.
Wow.
So again, just sort of tracking the waste through the circular economy. That's something that we started off, you know, we had been developing for the last, helping develop for the last 1 year. And that's something that's getting commercialized at the moment. So
that's great.
Yeah. So I think that's something that we are doing at the moment. But besides that, specifically looking at waste management as well, otherwise, you know, 80% of what we do at the moment is, like I said, it was LD. 20% is HD, but we are doing a little bit sort of more HD as well, and we've started doing a little PP as well now.
Okay.
So again, something that's very difficult to recycle, but something that we've taken on. So
that's wonderful. I like the blockchain-based technology platform, because I'm sure once you have such a system in place, it's easy to attract the big brands again, because that gives a lot of transparency, a lot of credibility, and I think that's the way for at least putting a good system in place. I know waste management, recycling is still a little unorganized in a developing country like India, but technology can definitely make it better.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Because, you know, again, you have a whole, you have authenticity, basically, is what this brings in. There is no question of, you know, this final material, has it actually used? You could claim 50% that you've used 50% recycled material in your final product. But have you used 50 or have you used 20? Is not something that people will be able to tell very easily.
Correct.
So how are you authenticating or giving proof that you have actually used the material you claim you have? You know, so something like that, I think, especially with the rules that have been brought in now, with the policies, like I said, that have been brought in now, where the government wants to see that you have used a certain percentage of waste in your final product, I think something like this would be brilliant for even brands to have as proof. Again, it's blockchain, so it's immutable. So, you know, nobody can question it.
Correct.
So I think something like that would be brilliant, especially when you sort of see it in line with the policies that have come in.
That is true. Pratibha, on a final note, all the while we have been talking about Lucro and the story of the brand and how it's scaling up and things around that. But this time around on the personal front, now coming back on the other side, you know the challenges that you face in the waste management and recycling part of it. But as a consumer, how do you think you can make it better for the businesses that operate in the other side, the waste management and recycling front? As a general tip that you, if you were to give to someone to say like, hey, I work in this space, but if you could do this better, it'll help the system be more efficient.
So I'll tell you what, I have been amazed by, you know, the municipality model that I was telling you that we have been doing, where we are collecting waste directly from people. I have been amazed that I have been getting calls from, I think just day before yesterday, I got a call from someone who's a dentist. We are doing our activity in a place called Baramati in Maharashtra.
Okay.
You know, which is about, I think, 5 hours from Bombay. Now, there's another town close to Baramati, which is about 20 kilometers away. I'm forgetting the name of this, the place. But I got a call from, you know, a medical student over there who's not a student, I think she was a dentist, who told me that we want to do something like this. We've just heard about this that you're doing in Baramati. We want to do something like this over here as well, because we obviously, everyone's generating a lot of plastic waste, and we would love it if there's a company that is willing to buy the plastic waste directly from us.
Nice.
And this is not the first call I've gotten. Over the last month or two, I've gotten numerous calls from places around Baramati that have known of this sort of project happening over there, and where they've been really interested in us coming and picking up from there. And in fact, to the point they've said, if you want, we will go to the local Nagarpalika and speak to, you know, the CEO over there ourselves.
Wow.
And ask them to sort of have this activity started in our city. So it's been amazing that as, you know, what you were saying, as a normal sort of a citizen or a normal person who knows something like recycling is happening, or, you know, how do you sort of maybe combat plastic waste, etc. This is something that people are doing. So people are pretty conscious about it. And when they hear of something good happening, or, you know, a way for them to be able to help combat maybe plastic waste, to make sure that something that they are generating doesn't end up in a landfill or just an incineration, if it actually has value to it, this is something that people are doing. Again, I think as a normal person, or, you know, person maybe who can't, who's not a part of the industry, segregation is something that we really need to pay focus on.
Correct.
Now, I know on a home to, you know, on a day-to-day basis, it is very difficult for us. For example, even I think where I'm staying, even if I segregate my waste, I mean, it's a very typical thing that the person that is taking it downstairs might end up mixing it, right? That's the typical thought that we have.
Correct.
But I'll also be honest, segregate your waste still at home, at least dry and wet, because the person that might go and end up mixing the both the waste will take some valuable items out of there first and then mix it. So, you know, at least they have something that they can get out of it. But still do your bit, even if this is something that you have a, you know, thought of that, you know, how does it matter? Because ultimately people are going to go mix it. But people, some of the other person will take something valuable out of it before mixing it. So, yeah, I think that's one from my end. I think segregation is the best example that I can give, to be very honest with you. Because
fair.
Ultimately, when you see plastic is lightweight, you know, with all its properties, etc., it is something that is very difficult for any industry to get rid of.
Correct.
Because ultimately, it has helped you, even say, example, food industry, you know, it has really helped people feed people right till the last leg, right? You
exactly.
can make sure that your product has reached a lot of sort of maybe rural areas where it might not have otherwise.
Correct.
Or where it might have become more expensive going to, or the food obviously would have gotten out of its shelf life before it even reached over there. So, I mean, it has helped a lot. So, you know, you don't really see it getting out of circulation very easily.
True.
Because it's something that people need. But what you can do from your end is make sure that you're segregating it. You have to make sure that you realize that every plastic has a lot of value to it. And, you know, this is something that I say very often. We, at least as Indians, have always known that paper has had an inherent value to it.
Correct.
Right? Where, you know, by the end of the month, even if it's a 50 bucks or if it's a 100 bucks, your whole bunch of newspapers, etc., are going to get sold out.
Exactly.
And we're not necessarily doing it for the money, because that 100 rupees might not make a lot of difference to us at the end of 1 month.
Correct.
But we have just done it because we know there is an inherent value to it. And you don't want to see it mixed up with other waste and go to waste.
Correct.
So if this is something that we can sort of imbibe in plastic as well, knowing fully that every plastic type has a lot of value to it, I think we can get there to achieving some sort of a solution to combating a plastic waste problem.
Well, that's really a nice note to kind of end the conversation on, because I agree with you on that point about collecting papers and then handing papers. Paper recycling is something that a lot of Indian households are still doing. And I still remember some households, even to this date, do this particular segregation of milk packets. I mean, they don't mix it with the general plastic waste, even milk packets. For a long time, it was quite popular among all households, at least in the South. But I think now, since there is a lot of plastic, I think people have just said, like, okay, let's dispose all plastics together.
Yeah.
But as you said, segregating is definitely a big value add. And that is, I think, just one bit that we can do to ensure that there is some value that we can give to the system, and so that, of course, we can't handle all the waste that we generate responsibly, but at least we can do this bit and do a part on this. Pratibha, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast and generally hear about the story of Lucro and the value that you bring to the business and setting up this massive operation of yours over the last few years. It's really picking up, and I'm glad that you were here to share this story. So thank you very much for taking time to join me on the podcast today.
Krish, it's been lovely talking to you as well. Thank you very much.
And that was a wrap on yet another insightful conversation. Couple of points worth recollecting is around the price and market for recycled products. It's great to know that Lucro has managed to be competitive on price with their recycled range of products. And it is also good to know that they have managed to find a market outside of India very early on. This is another testimony of how interconnected the ecosystem is and the range of challenges and along with it the opportunities. And towards the end, there was also a good little action item for us. Remember, even our small act of waste segregation goes a long way in doing our bit for the planet. Recycling and material recovery will be impossible without segregation of waste at source. So let's do our bit every single time. The links to connect with Pratibha and the Lucro team is in the show notes section of the podcast. While you check the links, also do check the link of terrageneration.com, our friends who are creating the beautiful artworks that you see in the recent episodes. Terra Generation is a content and marketing agency specialized in telling the stories of people and organizations working in climate, biodiversity conservation, and sustainability. And before I forget, your feedback is always appreciated. Do send them across. missionshunya@gmail.com is the ID. But if you really like the show, do share the episode to your friends and colleagues. It just takes about 30 seconds or less. I will be back in 2 weeks' time with yet another episode. Until then, this is Girish Shivakumar signing off. And as always, thank you for listening.